You're an expert on the War of 1812, is that correct?
Well, pretty much so. There's a couple people in the United States Army that study the War of 1812 in a scholarly fashion, and I'm one of those three people.
Can you tell me, was this always known as the War of 1812? I mean, it lasted several years beyond that. Back in the day, was it known as something else?
It was known as the Second War with Great Britain. But within just a few years of the end of the war, newspapers started referring to it as the War of 1812, and that title stuck. Of course, the war goes until February of 1815.
Do you know why newspapers chose to go with the War of 1812?
I'm guessing that that was just a striking name for the war. Second War with Great Britain just doesn't carry much with it, does it?
I guess not. Well, what can you tell us about the background, first of all, of General Alexander Macomb?
Macomb is just an intriguing character. He's born in Detroit, and Michigan claims him as a son of theirs. But, of course, his family was from New York. His dad was a businessman, owned an extensive amount of land, was deep into the fur trade, and that's what the connection with Detroit was. But at an early age, he returns to New York, and he's educated in New York and in New Jersey. Now, he's got a military bent to him right from an early age. He's commissioned as a cornet in the Light Dragoons in 1799. His patron is Alexander Hamilton. So the Macombs and the leading families of New York are all connected. The cornet is the lowest rank an officer can have, and a young cornet doesn't make much money, and he has to buy all of his own equipment and come up with his own horse. So he serves in the Light Dragoons for about a year until the election of Thomas Jefferson. When Jefferson comes to office, he eliminates about half of the army, and all the new officers are released. However, in 1802, he's brought back into service, but this time he's commissioned directly as a first lieutenant of engineers. So he bypasses the rank of second lieutenant. And from that point on, his rise in the army is meteoric. At a time when a person might spend 20 years as an officer and still be a captain, and that was quite typical, 2 years later, Macomb is promoted to captain of engineers. 3 years after that, he's promoted to major. He's a lieutenant colonel 2 years after that. And then in 1812, when Congress starts the buildup to fight the War of 1812, he's promoted to colonel. Now, this is interesting. As an engineer, he can't command soldiers. Macomb is clearly a bright officer, very well-mannered, very well thought of. He's brought to Washington, D.C., to the War Department as the adjutant general, and as such, he writes the orders that promote officers and send them to their assignments. He works with his patrons in D.C., and he wants a field command, and he'd like a promotion. And the Secretary of War and the President, James Madison, agree with that. So in July of 1812, he's promoted to colonel in the artillery. He's given command of a new regiment, the 3rd Artillery Regiment, and now he can command troops in the field. And he goes up to New York, to Greenbush, New York, where the major army is being formed, and he commands his regiment from that point on.
And eventually he's involved in the Battle of Plattsburgh, which happened 200 years ago.
Well, exactly right. It happened in 1814 in September. Macomb's command of the 3rd Artillery, again, is fairly interesting. Even though it's an artillery regiment, and it does have a couple companies that are manning artillery batteries in New York City and in Boston and on Lake Champlain, Macomb commands 7 companies that fight as infantry, and he's assigned to defend the base at Sackett's Harbor, which is the major American naval base on Lake Ontario. And the Americans and the Royal Navy are vying for command of that lake, which is really in the center of the Canadian theater. The War of 1812 will swirl around the edges of Lake Ontario. Most of the military action will be occurring there. So he's given command of the defense of this naval base. He's going to participate in the siege of Fort George in April of 1813. He's going to be sent on the Chrysler's Field campaign in November of 1813. And following that, he's going to be promoted to brigadier general based on his merit shown in those two campaigns, Fort George and the Chrysler's Field campaign. And he's one of the young generals that's promoted early in 1814, along with Winfield Scott and Edmund Pendleton Gaines and others, who are taking over leadership from the much older leaders who were losing battles in 1812 and 1813. So, again, James Madison and his Secretary of War, John Armstrong, who's also from New York, select Alexander Macomb at an early age to be a brigadier general. And at that point, he's now assigned to Plattsburgh, which is the major American naval base on Lake Champlain. Well, in 1814, Napoleon is defeated in Europe, and the British have huge numbers of ships, tens of thousands of trained, experienced soldiers, all sitting in Europe in the various ports of Spain and France and Great Britain. Great Britain has a choice. It can make peace with the United States, but the people of Great Britain, and particularly those in Parliament and in the government at this point, want to punish the United States because they perceive that when America declared war on them in June of 1812, that this was a stab in the back. While Great Britain had been carrying on an existential campaign against Napoleon, who is a dictator, and they're doing this for the benefit of all mankind, their cousins in America are declaring war on them, taking advantage of Britain's precarious position. So when Napoleon is defeated, the government of Great Britain decides to punish the United States, sends tens of thousands of troops and hundreds of warships across the Atlantic to make war against the United States to punish them. And we see this in the burning of Washington and the Battle of Baltimore, Fort McHenry, Star-Spangled Banner. We see this later on in the Battle of New Orleans. But a major army was sent to Montreal with the express orders to travel southward onto Lake Champlain to destroy the naval yard at Plattsburgh and to seize and retain as much of the border area and Lake Champlain as they could. The British government had every intention of pushing the American border south of the Great Lakes and grabbing everything north of the Ohio River and turning it into a neutral Indian state so that America would have no access to the water, so they would no longer be a threat to Canada. Now, back in Plattsburgh in September, the Secretary of War tells the commander, General Izard, to take 4,000 of his troops from Plattsburgh, march them across New York State to Fort Erie in Canada across the Niagara River to relieve a division that was under siege there. Now, Izard writes immediately to the Secretary of War and reminds him that there are 10,000 British troops only 100 miles away, and the minute he leaves Plattsburgh, the British will set off to capture Plattsburgh. The response from the Secretary of the War is, you have your orders, march 4,000 troops to Fort Erie. Izard obeys orders, and out of his three brigadier generals, he selects Alexander Macomb to stay at Plattsburgh with only about 1,500 troops and to defend it. So Macomb is in a fairly desperate situation. He's outnumbered about 6-1. And he's got to throw a creditable defense of the naval yard at Plattsburgh. Sure enough, as soon as Izard leaves on his march, the British depart Montreal. Within days, they cross the New York border. They march all the way to Plattsburgh. They brush aside all the American militia and regulars that Macomb has sent out there to slow them down, and they lay siege to the city of Plattsburgh. And that's why I call it Macomb's finest hour, because he successfully defends that town. In doing so, the British are forced to retreat, and the peace treaty is signed that December. And so the border between Canada and the United States remains where it was after the American Revolution. So Macomb is instrumental in preserving our national border.
Was he considered a hero in his day? Was the name Alexander Macomb well known across the nation?
After that battle, he absolutely was. There were two heroes of the Battle of Plattsburgh. One was Master Commandant Thomas McDonough, of course, who commanded the naval forces, and the other is Alexander Macomb. Congress awards them each gold coins struck in their honor, and New York State gives him a presentation saber, again marking him and his determination to defend that city in an honorable way, and that's where his fame begins within the United States. America looks to its war heroes, because there aren't very many of them. Of course, there's Andrew Jackson at the Battle of New Orleans. There's George Armistead, who defended Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor. There's Winfield Scott, who won a number of battles. And there's Alexander Macomb. So those are four of the heroes that come out of the War of 1812. And America had been losing battle after battle after battle until 1814 and 1815, when they win a few. And so now the patriotism, the nationalism, the good feeling in America for winning a few battles after 2 years of defeats takes these four individuals and propels them onto the national stage.
Were battlefield strategies, techniques in the War of 1812 similar to the Revolutionary War, or was this a much different type of war?
Oh, good question. No, the battlefield techniques were very much the same. Napoleonic France, or I should say Revolutionary France, had come up with new battlefield tactics that were a combination of lines and columns. But these tactics, which were new in their time, were not adopted by either the British Army or the U.S. Army. So both the British and the Americans were fighting with tactics that would have been extremely similar to someone in the American Revolution. And, of course, the initial American commanders in the War of 1812 had been captains and lieutenants during the American Revolution. So they had seen battlefield fighting before, and they were going to replicate what they remember from their youth.
Macomb, Illinois, of course, is named after General Alexander Macomb. I imagine Macomb, Michigan is the same. Are there many other Macombs out there that you know of?
That's a good question. I'm unaware of any others, to tell you the truth.
I know there's somewhere down south there's a Macomb, but it's spelled M-C-C-O-M-B. And I don't know if that would be a variation on the spelling of his name. I don't know.
I don't know. In all of the material that I've seen, the original material written during the War of 1812, it's always M-A-C-O-M-B. So I don't think there were any variations 200 years ago.
So how do you suppose a town in western Illinois came to be named after Alexander Macomb? Is it in part because this is the military tract from the War of 1812?
Well, I think it's based on his record. As I said, after the war, historians call this in America an era of good feelings. Americans are proud to be Americans. They defended themselves during the war. As far as America was concerned, they won the War of 1812. That was their first war under the Constitution. I think the handful of heroes from the war, as America moves west, the naming opportunities are considerable. And in the South and in the Southwest as well, you can pick up city names and county names that are named after folks from that era. So I'm assuming that Macomb, I think just because of his popularity at the time, as the town is being formed, it was an honor to him, I'm guessing.
What happens with Alexander Macomb's life after the War of 1812?
Ah, very good. After the war, the War Department reduces the army, and the officer corps is reduced by 85%. Most of the generals are released. Four generals are retained in service, and Alexander Macomb is one of them. Again, he is one of the recent heroes of the war. He's on a board that selects which officers will be retained in the army and which ones will leave. Now, for his service at Plattsburgh, he's given a brevet promotion to major general. So his real rank is brigadier general. He receives a brevet to major general. And what this means is that he can wear the rank of a major general. People will address him as major general. However, he's still being paid as a brigadier general. And his place in the order of merit, if you will, his order of ranking at the War Department would be as a brigadier general. So now he's one of the few that remains in the service, one of the four that remain. The army is going to be reduced again from 10,000 soldiers in 1815. In 1821, it's going to be reduced further to about 7,000 soldiers. And the army is reduced now to two generals who will serve as generals. Now, two people outrank Alexander Macomb as major generals. These are Edmund Gaines and Winfield Scott. Both very creditable soldiers, both heroes in their own right. And the two of them are bickering over their what their relative rank is in the Army. Each one claims that they outrank the other. President John Quincy Adams has to select a commanding general in 1828. The commanding general's a new position. Jacob Brown served in that capacity, but now Jacob Brown has died of a stroke. The president needs to select a replacement. He bypasses both Gaines and Winfield Scott, goes down to the third-ranking general, and grabs Alexander Macomb. He gets a permanent promotion to major general, and now he's the commanding general of the army. And, of course, he's going to serve from 1828 to 1841, again, very creditably, until his death.
Is the name Alexander Macomb still well known among military historians today?
Not really. I think in American military historians, the American Civil War is the great watershed of events. Among the American people, I think military history begins on with Pickett's charge at the Battle of Gettysburg. And anything before that is forgotten because the American Civil War is just so overpowerfully significant to the United States as a nation. And, of course, many Americans today can find relatives that fought on either or both sides during the American Civil War. So what happens prior to the Civil War, other than bits and pieces of the American Revolution, has been largely forgotten among military historians. Now, those of us who study the Army prior to the American Civil War, Alexander Macomb, Winfield Scott, Andrew Jackson, they're all well-known characters who had an important influence on professionalizing the Army between the War of 1812 and the American Civil War. So the hardcore professional officers who fight the American Civil War, many are graduates of West Point, and many of them are fairly professional officers. And that was not the case during the American Revolution. And I think Alexander Macomb is part of that emerging professionalism. So in that regard, he had a big impact in training the officers who would end up commanding forces in the American Civil War.